Thank you so much for joining me, man. I know you've been very, very busy as the
Oh
past
yeah.
few days.
Yep, we've been doing a lot of stuff, and we did a few warm-up shows in the States, Pittsburgh and Saginaw, because we have that May tour coming up in starts off in Warsaw, like I think on May 8th, and we're doing that. So we're preparing for that, playing some new songs from the new record and putting the list together. You know, it's hard to put a list together when you have 17 records. And if we do two songs off of each record, you know, we'll be there for 3 hours, which I'm sure everybody would love. But yeah, no, we're psyched, man. The new record is coming out, and we're psyched, man.
Mean Streets, Feel the Fire has been stuck in my head this whole week. I think it's great, man. It's so good that a band with such a massive legacy still puts out such great bangers, such amazing hits.
Thank you, man.
You beat me to it. I was gonna ask, how do you guys even go about putting together a set list? Like, do you be like, all right, let's do a little from this era, the new stuff? How do you balance out Riot 5 with old Riot?
It's tough, you know. What we try to do, you know, we're, you know, obviously we're the fifth chapter of the band when I continued on from the Thunderstill thing. But you know, it's one of the things where we didn't want to rely on it so much, since we are moving forward from 1988, and I am an original member, get all that craziness out of the way. But you know, you got to play some of the older stuff for the fans, obviously. You always got to play Swords and Tequila. You got to play Warrior, you know, Outlaw, Road Racing. You know, you got to do the hits. And then we try to incorporate it, but it is tough, you know. So we know, you know, half a dozen off of Fire Down Under, we can only pick, you know, two usually, and then we'll do two off of Rock City, you know, a couple off Narita. So we try to at least, you know, grab one or two off of each album, but we have so many, it makes it tough. But we feel like we know what the fans kind of want to hear, you know, and we've seen it by audience, you know, their responses. And when they tell us, hey, are y'all gonna play Black Leather and Glittering Still? Hey, are y'all gonna play, you know, and we're just like, so we kind of put it together, you know. But also you gotta incorporate your new album. And so we're gonna play a few of those. We don't wanna be like, you know, how some bands, Maiden was doing it, where they just played nothing but new stuff. And I mean, that's cool, but a lot of time fans wanna hear that, you know, some of the early stuff. So you gotta kinda please you know, the crowd. So we'll probably play three or four new ones, and then we'll intertwine it with, you know, some of the Riot 5 and some of the historic songs and stuff like that. But yeah, when you have that many legacy like this, it's hard to come up with the ultimate set list, you know.
I can imagine, man. And the Riot fans are definitely eating good with how amazing these singles have been. How long has Mean Streets been in the works from inception to its full release?
Been a while because of the lockdown was one thing, the pandemic thingy that was going on, you know, it shut the world down. And during that time, we started writing, because there was a lot of factors. We didn't want to release during the pandemic like some bands did. We're like, we wanted to get back to a little more, you know, some normalcy, to where you can still get the new Riot record and go see them play. Well, you know, a lot of record stores weren't open, the ones, the record stores there are. And then some of the venues, you know, in other countries and places, it was just hard to travel. It was nuts. So we were like, let's let it come down a notch, you know. But so we took our time in that 5, 6 years, but a lot of things were happening. We changed labels. We went through three different producers, you know, it was crazy. So what we did during that, we just started writing music. And we always write more than comes out on the record. We wrote like 20 songs, and
Wow.
Mike writes some and I write some, and we pick the best ones. So we pick some of Mike's and then pick some of mine, and we listen to them and feel like, okay, these are the ones to run with. So when we had that, we had to demo it, and Frankie had to put drums, Todd had to sing, you know. So we demo everything first to make sure we got a good song. And once we did that, then we had to do the producer thing. And the first guy was the one that did Armor of Light, Chris Collier. He is a very tight mixer. He makes it sound very power metal, like a Nightwish or something, sample drums. And, you know, we like that sound. But on the new record, as you were saying, we're trying to dabble in the rock side of Riot too, besides the power metal. Like I wrote some, to please the older fans, And so we thought the mix might be a little bit too sample tight. We needed a big production. So we ended up, he did the whole record. We paid him and we went to two other guys. They were friends of our little guitar player, Nick, and they produced it. It sounded pretty good too, but the label was like, yeah, it sounds great, but man, we want that, that sound. Can you get Bruno Ravel, the guy that did Immortal Soul when we came back, and a couple records for us? Bruno from Danger Danger, that 80s band, and he was in Westworld with Mark Reale and Tony Harnell from TNT. Anyway, so he couldn't do it at first, and then he finally found time. So we gave him some of the demos, and then he just did a couple, and they sounded excellent. So he said, we're going with Bruno. So he finally got everything and he produced it. So each production took a few months. And so that, along with, writing and then recording, and then also the label, we run Nuclear Blast. And then Marcus said, hey, we're making an offshoot label called Atomic Fire. And we were like, wow. He goes, but you have the freedom to stay with Nuclear Blast if you want, because we owed him another record. He goes, or you can come with us. I said, what are the legalities of it? Because, when you're under contract, he goes, no, we're all family. They just let you choose and you can, it's all good. So
Cool.
we thought about it and we said, well, Atomic Fire's got all our family from Nuclear Blast, so we should go with them. They're Riot fans, they know how to push us. So we said, let's do that. So we went ahead and went over there because they're still like old school CDs, vinyl, stuff. And Believe, who's working with Nuclear Blast now, they're doing a lot of streaming, and we don't mind that, but we like a lot of the physical stuff. So we went with Atomic Fire, and that took a little bit, negotiating, and we did the record deal with them. And then they came up with a plan to put the record out, so it took a little bit. And as you know, it was supposed to be released last week, April 12th. It got pushed back, and people were like, what the hell is going on? It was because not just pre-sales were crazy good. They joined forces with Raining Phoenix. If you've seen that, RPM, Raining Phoenix is a great, addition. So it's Atomic Fire and Raining Phoenix handling us, and they're like, they just did Kerry King solo band from Slayer, Sebastian Bach, Deicide, Hammerfall, Helloween. I'm like, dude, they're getting like a great roster. So we're excited about that. But after all the producers, recording, label changes, and all that, we're here. So anyhow, and they pushed it back again to like May 10th. So we're like, okay, but it's actually out. I mean, we got our copies, we got CDs, our promos and stuff. And even on those two shows, I told Mark, as I said, we told people we'd have it available. So pre-release, we did have a box of CDs and some vinyl for the fans, and a few people did buy them. So it was kind of cool. And the reaction so far is pretty good. Like you said, the videos that came out, the first one, High Noon, is more like what I used to write in Thunderstill type. And then I a real good sing-along, Western kind of lyrics, like Mark Reale, the original guitar player. He loved Westerns. That's why he wrote Outlaw, Gunfighter, Restless Breed, all these songs. So I channeled that, and they wanted to put that out first to make people, this is Riot, here they are, they're back. They were talking about Feel the Fire, then they're like, well, that's kind of a rocker song, and you got a chick in there. It's like, how are people gonna feel? Like, what the fuck did Riot do? So anyway, it was groovy though. I was like, well, so we decided to put that out as a lyric video. And then they said, let's do a few real videos. And they flew us up to New York and Jersey. And we shot, we did the Feel the Fire. There was like Miss Pennsylvania in it, Liv Tyler. And they said, well, let's go old school. It sounds like Accept, Old Priest, and have her dance. You can't go wrong with a good looking woman, so she was in there. And then, that when that video came out, it's the God, it was over 500,000 views in like a month, less than a month. So we were very like, wow, this never happened to us. I don't think we, those views are a lot. So we were knocked out. So we're like, well, people are digging that, that we're not just staying Thunderstill, like Riot 5 has been doing. We decided when we had that break, like you asked, We decided let's go back a little bit, you know. So I wrote a couple power metal songs, and then I wrote Feel the Fire, you know, as a rocker, and then Lean Into It towards the end of the record. Sounds like Overdrive from Rock City with a real nice chorus. And then Mike writes his music from his era, like the Mike DeMeo, you know. So he writes guitar-oriented music. And then so we just decided to combine all the best songs from each of us, and you know, and we thought we, you know, and then they came out with the videos, Fill the Fire, and then they did Love Beyond the Grave, the newest one with the graveyard scene. And so, you know, we're just trying a little bit of variety, but you know, keeping the fans there. You know what I mean?
Well, I was going to ask how this record stands out from the rest of the band's discography, but you're kind of telling me how it seems like this record's kind of a sampler where there's a bit of something for every kind of Riot fan. Was this like the initial vision when going into this record, or did that kind of just naturally happen?
Yeah, it naturally happened, you know, when we started writing. But I did talk to Mike. I said, you know, Riot is not just a power metal band. You know, we're from old school. We do the hard rock, Fire Down Under, and stuff like that. I said, so I did say I'm going to look into writing some stuff like that. And he was like, yeah, that'll be great. So, you know, it was, you know, consciously done, but kind of like when I'm just sitting here writing a song, I'm like, you know, let's try this. So yeah, I wrote something real simple. You know, and normally, you know, we're all over the place, you know, I'm writing all these riffs and, but, you know, we just want to write, you know, a good song. You know, Mark Reale, the original guitar player, he was like, you know, each song has to have a song within a song. Like there's the song, then the vocals are a song, the guitar solos are a song that you can sing along. So, you know, when I was younger, when I wrote like Flight of the Warrior, you know, it's like all these riffs, but then we like shining into the night, you know, we're doing all that. So it's kind of a formula that I always stick to. I always try to do my vein of writing with Mark back in the day. And so I decided to venture out a little bit and write a couple of those kind of songs. So hopefully it's pleasing, you know, even Riot fans from the past, you know. So I think it's well-rounded, you know, but we're sticking to us, you know, we're the fifth chapter, so we move forward in that vein. So we're happy with how it came out, and hopefully everybody digs it.
Of course, man. Now, I slowly want to go back in time here. You're talking about, this new chapter. What was it like in terms of the recruiting process, getting all these members together for Riot 5?
It was, well, you know, we when we decided to continue, after, you know, Mark's passing, you know, it was kind of rough, you know, like because we have so many member changes and so much history in the span. Like I joined in 84 with Rhett Foerster and Sandy, and then we took a left turn and decided to go power metal with Thundersteel. So then all that time with me leaving and them doing stuff, we got the Thundersteel lineup back together in 2008 and did that Immortal Soul. So, you know, we were back on track with Mark, and then we started playing shows, you know, and it was great. And then Mark was, you know, getting sick, more sick. You know, he lived with me when he passed away, and we were taking him to the hospital and stuff and trying to get him the best care. And he had Crohn's disease. So he ended up passing away, you know, and it was sad for us. And you know, because Mark was an only child and his mom passed away. So his dad, Tony, is still alive and he's like 90 something. So we basically became family with him. And we even asked a little bit for his guidance. Like, we don't want to like keep the band going. Like some bands, like, you know, no members ever. So we're like, no, we got to do it the right way. You know, we're not the first five records where when I joined, you know, we're 1988. So we're the Thundersteel lineup. I'm an original member from that. We continue in that honor. So when Mark did pass away, Mike Flint, you know, we were all hurt, but it got to a point where I said, well, let me talk to the labels because contractually we were supposed to release another one. So I asked the label and they were like, well, yeah, it's going to be a touchy subject, but let's hear what you got. So I started demoing songs, and you know, I said, demoing with Bobby Jarzombek, who was the drummer from Thundersteel, and Tony Moore. Well, Bobby was playing with a million bands at the time: Sebastian Bach, Halford, Fates Warning. So he couldn't continue on. And then Tony Moore, he was doing something else too. And he said, you know, he's older. My pipes aren't like they used to be, so I'm not sure I could do it anymore. So I ended up reaching out and I found Todd Michael Hall. We had a couple guys that we were working with, this Chandler Mogul guy. And then Tony Harnell was actually writing with me, but we had a different vision. He started getting into more of that grungy kind of, it was like a Pearl Jam, his ideas. I said, no, this is riot. You know, we can't do that. So we ended up talking to a few friends, and my friend from Germany told me about Todd Michael Hall, even though he lived in Detroit. I had to go to Germany to find the guy. He said he's playing with one of my bands, Jack Starr from Virgin Steel. He's looking for a gig. He's a great singer. So I looked at the videos and heard his voice. He looks great, sounds great. Contacted him. I said, will you put your vocals on my songs? I had written two songs. He said, yeah. So put them on my demos and I sent them to the label and just to see their reaction if they want us to continue. And they loved it. They're like, this is great. You know, this is, you know, awesome. So we ended up, you know, recording music, and then we needed a drummer. So we got some of the Riot family, Frankie Gilchrist from, he's from Virgin Steel too, and Liege Lord. He played on Army of One, so he had some history. So we got him, and then we needed another guitar player, the second one, and we were going to get Rowan Robertson at one time, the young kid from Dio who's older now. But a lot of things just started changing, and then Mike owns a guitar studio in Long Island, Guitar Masters, and Nick was one of his students, but grew up and started teaching there, and he's phenomenal, little Nick. And so he said, let's use him. So that's where the lineup came, and then we started doing demos and recording it. And then the next thing was, let's release it, see what the people think. Let's play some shows, see what the people think. If there's even a future for this. And I said, well, let's call it the fifth chapter because Todd's the fifth singer. So people were like, thought it was a V. I said, no, it's a Roman numeral five. So, you know, we are Riot, but we call us Riot the fifth chapter with Riot five. Some markets, they just call us Japan. They never use the V on the albums. They take it off. It's just Riot. So we decided to do that to be kind of cool. Talk to Mr. Reale, and he was cool with it. At the funeral, I mean, he was like, he, what was it? Don't let the music die with my son, be buried with my son, or something. They go, that's how people remember him. Keep his legacy and his music going. I was like, oh my God. So it's like, yeah, so we have to. So after we did all the songs, the label loved it. They ended up putting it out. We got great reaction, and we played a few big festivals. We got great reactions, and we said, well, we're continuing on, but we're doing it in the right way, you know. It's not a cash cow, obviously, because you know we're not Metallica. You know, we you know, so, you know, a few cats still have regular jobs, you know, and we do the best we can. You know, there are some good points and bad points, but we continue on for the legacy and for the fans, because we're where the money's not there, the passion's there. Just seeing the crowd dig the band and buy the records and love it, that's the payday sometimes, you know. So we feel like we have a great lineup. We're like brothers, and this is also a record for Riot. Three albums with the same lineup. Never been done. So yeah, meet the Riot Five, same one on Unleash the Fire, Armor and Light, and the new one. So it's a record. So that's a good thing.
So good, so good. And the band's in such a good place right now. And as a younger fan, you know, it's so cool that I can hold the old stuff and the new stuff in the same light and feel like I can enjoy both equally. I feel like a lot of these kinds of bands have been putting out amazing records lately. Now I definitely want to touch on Thundersteel and just your evolution as a musician. Since Thundersteel, how much do you feel your approach to songwriting and just general creative evolution has evolved since that record?
Yeah, well, I learned a lot from Mark Reale. You know, I was in when I first I'd known him 10 years before I even joined Riot. We were friends. A mutual friend introduced us, and Mark would come to our I was in the Texas Slayer. You know, there was the LA Slayer and the Texas Slayer. We actually came out first. We had two records, and then Tom and them came out. And It was cool. But when I was in that version, Mark would come jam with us. We actually would do swords and tequila with him and hang out. So I got to know him, and I would go to New York, stay with him. He would come in Texas, stay with me. We just had a real good bond besides musically. We were like great friends and stuff. So during that time, we started writing music together. He's like, "Hey, I'm working on Born in America. You want to help me write songs?" So I said, "Yeah." So we would start our writing there. And I helped him write four songs in Born in America, even though I wasn't on the record. And then when I got
Which
the phone,
ones?
Gunfighter, Heavy Metal Machine, Running from the Law, and what was the other one? Not Born in America. Oh, what was that on there? I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, so
It'll come back.
we wrote those, and then we demoed them with a Slayer band, which ended up turning into Nerita. Mark did a solo band, so that's when we started writing music together. Nerita, we wrote Thundersteel and Fight or Fall and Crimson Storm, and then we took them with us because after we made the change from riot rock to riot power metal, we took some of that solo stuff. So that's kind of where my writing started changing, because in Slayer, we were doing just straight up power metal. Mark taught me to, like I was telling you, a song within a song. So he was like, "Well, you're a great songwriter with fast licks and a bass player playing guitar licks." He goes, "That's cool, but," he goes, "we got to make a song." So that's why the solos are always, you can sing them in your head. The vocals, you can sing them along with all the power stuff. So I kind of like, I got that from Mark. He was kind of a mentor too. So as we progressed, we had this writing relationship, and that's kind of where I am now. I evolved from, Mark giving me advice all the time. And so it comes natural now. I mean, I just think back of like, what would me and Mark do? So a lot of the time when I write a fast song, I always got to have the hook, like on High Noon. It's all the lyrics and, but High Noon, you always got to do that memorable chorus and like, Thundersteel, all that. You always got to have that and not just, just pounding constantly. So that's what I try to incorporate on the new record. I wrote Hell to the Warriors and High Noon, which are more power metal. Then I wrote Mean Streets, the title track, which is kind of a Johnny's Back vibe, and Feel the Fire rocker. Mortalize is like a fast road racing. So I kind of channeled the riot, the writing style, and I tried to make, every song please people from all eras. And then Mike, of course, brought his more guitar-oriented music, like Love Beyond the Grave. That's one of his. And then Open Road and Higher and stuff. He writes more like when his era with DeMeo, with really guitar stuff and more of that, Yngwie, Alcatraz, Whitesnake, that more poppy-ish with that singer and stuff like that. So we combined all the styles and make one variety of a decent record. But writing comes natural now. I mean,
Cool.
I know what Riot's formula is. So I've evolved, but now it's pretty easy.
Refined, you know.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on the writing and recording process of Thundersteel? What was that? What was it like recording that album? How'd the label treat you for that record?
Well, it was cool. That was back in the day when you actually recorded in a studio. I mean, you still do it now, but a lot of stuff with technology, you can have your own studio and send all the files, which we've done. Thundersteel was old school, 2-inch tape, having to go up there and record, rhythm section together, all that stuff. It was really cool because, when I joined Riot, I was on the second half of Born in America, and then when we made the switch, Mark was, we had already been writing, and he knew, all the stuff that we had written from Nerita, like, Thundersteel and all that stuff. So, it was, it was one of those things where we made the change, and we were going like, well, we were hard rock, but then Priest was rising up, Iron Maiden, new wave of British heavy metal. We got to keep up with the Joneses. So let's make a Fire Down Under on steroids, like something fast but melodic. So that's when that came about. And we moved back to New York from LA, and we started using the past management, and they produced it. And we did demoing, and they sent like four songs, and we had interest from Polygram, and then We ended up going with CBS, and we were happy, you know. At the time, Michael Jackson and Springsteen were on that label. We're like, wow. So, you know, it was great. We recorded it in Green Street Studios in New York City, where they recorded every record from Rock City to Fire Down Under, all that stuff. So it
Wow.
was cool. So we recorded Thunder Still There, same producers from all the records. And we gave it to CBS. We were like, wow, this is great. And they put it out, and they were in back of it. And a lot of people were like, wow, this is Riot. This is a little bit different, you know, and it's a change. But as long as you have good music, I think people will dig it, you know. I mean, when they got a bluesy singer after Guy Speranza, Rhett Foerster, I was like, what the hell is this? It's a different. And then when we went power metal, they're like, what is this? You know, so, but you know, we toured and we put out Thunder Still, then we put the Privilege of Power out, and the band was kicking ass, and we were touring and stuff, and it was cool. It was a different you know, era of Riot and writing style and stuff, and that's what we continue on now. The fifth chapter is from Thunder Still on. That's why people, you know, I'm like, I'm not the original member, but I'm the original member from Thunder Still with what we're doing, because we play 90% of my songs from Thunder Still and the new Riot 5 stuff. But you, like I said, you got to do a handful of the classics for the fans. But you know, it's just one of them things where you know, you're just out there playing you know, a mass majority of tunes, and you're trying to please everybody and move on in a positive direction. So Thunder Still was great. We were like, wow, it's different. But we got great reviews, and we did the second record for CBS too. Not as much promotion in that record. They just did our first one. The second one was semi okay. And Privilege of Power was a conceptual album with all this crazy stuff. But it was cool, you know. That was There's two records in Riot's history that are the biggest, Fire Down Under and Thunder Still. Those are the biggest ones, biggest sellers we have. And so we have to play a few off each one. But Thunder Still, that's my baby. She turned like 36 this year, 37. I'm like, Jesus, she's older than you.
Yeah, by 11 years. Do you remember the exact like how much they gave you in terms of like recording time and like the specific budget for that record?
They did well back, everything was different back in the day than it is now. I mean, back then, CBS Record would give even a band like Riot like a chunk of, I think it was like a couple hundred thousand dollars. But you were recording in Green Street Studios, who did everybody. They recorded the Stones, some big bands, so they were used to that. That's where that's where the rap was created. I remember that. They were like, they call it street poetry, and we're like, what the hell is this shit? Guys on the corner, you know, singing rhyming words over and over. So they discovered like LL Cool J and all those bands. So it was a big time studio. So Run DMC, I met all those guys there back in the day, like the old school rappers. Yeah, NWA, all that. And it was just one of them places where everybody recorded, and they got big budget. So our management at the time, yeah, they got like, we don't even get a quarter of that now. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, we'll get, you know, God, you know, like, you know, you get sometimes like 50, that's high, you know, because it's the technology too now. Like back then, they flew us to the studio. We recorded in a real studio with producers doing takes over and over, miking things, doing this and doing that, rewinding the tape. Rewinding the tape. Now, in this day and age, we all have studios in our house, and I record my bass tracks in my studio, and I can edit them real easy by myself. You know what I mean? I could just edit it, and then when we're done, we have a giant folder, upload folder, that we upload all our files, and it goes to Bruno, the producer. He opens it and lines everything up. We record drums at a studio. Frankie has a he has a place to record in his house, but drums, they're a little bit more, you know, crucial with the miking and the big overhead sound. So he recorded him in a studio, and then we'll do some guitar work at a studio, but mainly the rhythms and everything are, I did all the bass here. You know, I got the whole setup, the studio setup, and the rig in my garage. And so we do that, and we send it to him. So that's when you cut down. You don't have to fly up there, 2-inch tape. I have my own studio. I send him the bass. So the money is good enough. and we're able to pay the production and put a few bucks in our pockets and stuff. So it works out.
Yeah, very, very interesting to hear, man. Since we're talking about some of the early days, do you remember the first ever show you did with Riot?
Yeah, I did. We did. God, I think the first show I did with Riot was at the Troubadour in Hollywood, California, and
What
the
a
Rock. Yeah, and the
wow.
Roxy. Yeah, I did the Roxy. We did the Roxy with them too. I remember Warrant opened up for us at the Roxy. It was kind of strange. They weren't big yet. And then Keel opened up for us. That band, Ron Keel. I remember they opened for us. But that was my first show when I got to join the original lineup. You know, and I already knew them. I knew Sandy and Rhett and all of them. And it was cool to be able to, you know, be asked to join the band because yeah, Mark called me one day and after I wrote some songs, they were getting ready to go back on tour. They were going to do some dates that I got to do with them with like AC/DC. I was like this young guy and I got to be hoisted into the limelight. They bought me all brand new basses and gear and stuff. But I remember he called me, he said, "Hey, Kip's not gonna do the tour anymore and he doesn't want to be a part of it." And I was like, "Well, who are you gonna get?" And Mark was like, "You fucking idiot. What do you think I'm calling you for?" I was like, "You want me to join Riot?" He said, "Yeah." I was like, "Fucking A." So yeah, so you know, then that's what happened. I joined and then we rehearsed. We went out to LA and SIR, the old school rehearsal places, rehearsed, and then we started playing around and we recorded. We recorded demos. Sign of the Crimson Storm was one of the original with Rhett Forrester and Sandy. It's recorded, you know, before we moved it to the high vocals and thunder still. And we played and shopped and but anyway, yeah, it was the Troubadour. And then we did yeah, it was the Roxy. And then we started playing around at different places. The big place in Pasadena, I forget what it was called, but back in the day all the bands played, but it was Perkins Palace, all these different places. And so those were my things. And then I got to play with a couple big shows with them when they did some stuff, like a couple AC/DC shows, you know. So I was like, wow, you know, this is real. And so those but my first show was just us at the Tube and it was sold out and it was great. And that was my introduction. And then I got to play some better shows and stuff. So it was
Yeah.
awesome. Joining one of your favorite bands, you know, it's like that rock star movie with Marky Mark, you know. He
Yeah.
got to join his band, you know,
It is.
so
Yeah.
that's kind of how it was, you know.
It is. Now, I feel like there's not a lot of discussion about the 90s era of Riot. How do you reflect on the material the band put out in the 90s?
Well, after the Privilege of Power, I departed for a while. We were having, there was a lot of problems. I mean, I don't know if you've seen some of the documentaries or things
Yes,
about bad
yeah.
management. It's all over the place. And basically what happened was, you know, after I joined, I did Privilege of Power and things started changing with management, like gigs. We would go to Japan and we'd make a ton in Japan. We were like Iron Maiden in Japan. And so it was like we'd make a lot of money. And then all of a sudden, you know, rather than the management taking like you're supposed to 10%, you know, booking agencies take 10%, 15%, and you give the band the rest. Well, it started getting to where the management slash production team was taking everything and giving us just a little bit. And it took me a while to learn because when I joined Riot, I was just happy to be in the band. I didn't know the business as much, but then I started realizing, talking to friends about the business, and I found out these guys were misappropriating some funds. So I ended up after Privilege of Power, I did some touring and then I decided to go ahead and leave. I was like, you know what? I was like, you're taking all the money. I can't do
Fair enough. Fair enough.
it. So they kept going. And when I left, I suggested a friend of mine, Pete Perez, and he started doing that 90s era right with Mike DeMeo, a different singer too. And so after that, they had like four or five records with DeMeo and the music changed again. They went back to like kind of what Mike writes now, his era. He was a big part of that, you know, because he joined after Thunderstill and Privilege of Power. So, you know, Mike DeMeo was a bluesy singer and they started doing that kind of music, kind of, you know, rocker night you know, Nightbreaker was kind of one of those records, and Inishmore was, but it was cool. It was just different. It wasn't a big thing. It was a great era of the band, but it wasn't like any major thing, or it wasn't like a big part of Riot. You know, the big records were Fire Down Under and Thunderstill. So basically, after all that, and I left, Bobby called me, Bobby Jarzombek. You know, Tony Moore left with me, and then Bobby stayed for a while, and Bobby called me. He says, "Hey, while I'm out with Fates Warning and Sebastian and Hoffnung, I get a lot of people handing me Riot records, Thunderstill. They want to see that get back together." So Mark did the same thing. So that's when we kind of got the band back together, you know, back in 2008, the Thunderstill lineup. And that's when I came back into the picture. Mike DeMeo didn't want to sing anymore. He was doing another project. So then we got back together, me, Mark, Bobby Jarzombek, and Tony Moore and stuff. And we had Mike, we brought Mike along. And so we did that. But, you know, it was a cool era, but it was probably not one of the standouts for the band. Didn't get any major activity, but great music on there. We still play some songs from the DeMeo era. But moving forward with Immortal Soul, and then Mark passed, and then we're continuing on in that kind of vein and stuff. So, and we're doing great. You know, they a lot of those interviews, there's always Riot, the unluckiest band in the world. It was like, well, with the old management, it was, but Riot 5, we're the luckiest band in the world. I mean, we're on a major label. We're about to tour with, you know, some big bands, and we're still continuing on. 50-year anniversary next year. The band started in 1975, and 2025, 50th anniversary of the band, you know. So, and we have some stuff planned, some touring with some old members joining us, and maybe recording some of the classics for the 50th anniversary. So we're still here.
Yeah.
Can't get rid of us.
Well, cheers. Well, it's so awesome, man, 'cause like the band almost 50 years and the band's putting out some of the best material it's ever put out. It's so awesome. You did mention the Japanese audience. Why do you think Riot translates so well in Japan?
I think it's like that with a lot of the bands, but we have a relationship with them. Like back in 89, we went over there, and the band, we were on, you know, CBS Records over there, and we were just big time over there. And they just always had this thing for Riot, you know, where in the States, you know, we're a medium-sized band. You know, and over there, we're like, yeah, we play like, you know, 10,000 seat halls, and they sell out, and we're the only band. And it's, I think from back in 89, we had the push from the label. And, you know, we had a lot of little Japanese things like the album called Narita. That's a place in Japan. We've had a lot of little Japanese things here and there, and I think they related to it. So the first time we went, the band went, it was actually 89, our representation, because even the first five record, the early lineup, they never went to Japan. So we had to play everything. So we went over there, and it was we did press. It was insane. And I remember we told the story where we pull up, they get limo us from the airport, and we're coming to the hotel, and there's like 200 people out there, and they're wearing kimonos, and we're like, me and Tony are like, oh, look, it's like a wedding. We're like going, it's like a Japanese wedding. That's cool. We're having a party here, right? So then the security guy comes walking through him, and he opens the door. He goes, "Stay put." He was going, "This is for you guys." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "All these people here are going to try to like touch you, take a picture and stuff, and we're just going like, get out of here." And they're like, "Yeah." So I remember getting out, and the two guys escorting us through there, and then all of a sudden we saw people holding up records and different things. We were like, holy cow, you know. So we got that taste of that big time, you know. So anyway, it's
Wow.
always been like that. And then we went the very next year, same thing. And to this day, every time we go over there, it's just the fans are incredible. We'll be over there in July. We're gonna go over and do some shows in the 18th, I think, of July. And you know, it's just always been one of those. It'll be the same. It's not 200 people now, but there'll be about 50 people, you know. So it's still, the excitement is there, and the dates are already sold out, you know, they told us. So I'm like, all right. So, but Japan has just got a, you know, a place in our heart. I mean, they've been followers and they're very passionate about the band. They follow the band. They dress up in our little quirky seal head mask. They put them on at the shows, and they're real. They like the Johnny character and stuff. It's just they relate to it, and it's just great. They treat us like, they treat us like star. It's like a priest thing over there. Everything's beautiful. The people are badass. So, I wrote a song for him on Unleash the Fire called Land of the Rising Sun. And the lyrics are about us going over there in 1989 and the reception we got. So I wrote a thing about it, and we play that live over there. So
Wow.
yeah, it's a cool place. There's certain markets where it's great, and then there's some is okay, like Greece and Spain. And Italy, those are great markets. Germany is great too. There's some real key markets that are great. Japan, all the Asian stuff like that. Just like in America, we're the mid-sized band, so we have East Coast and West Coast. New York, Cali, Chicago, Texas. Those are great. We can get big crowds when you play, Muskogee, Montana on a Tuesday. There'll be a handful of people there, but it just depends, man. And like I said, at this point, it's not a cash cow or money maker. It's more of a passionate thing to be able to release our music and see people enjoy it. That's the pay, I mean, that's why we keep going. We're not millionaires, but we are millionaires in the aspect of watching the people go nuts and enjoy our music. So that's the pay.
Yeah, beautifully, beautifully said. Now you did mention the seal heads. I'm curious, what was your initial reaction to that mascot?
Well, it came out in the first record, but when I was talking to Mark, what it came from is the first record, Rock City. It has like the seal standing there, big and muscular. He's holding the axe, and in back of him, you see like bodies laying, right? The producer, Steve, his brother-in-law was an avant-garde artist. And he said, "Hey, we need something for this band, Riot." He says, "Well, I'll come up with something." And back then, it was about the clubbing of the seals. I don't know if you remember all that,
Yes.
hurting the animals. So that's kind of what it was at first. So, but everybody freaked out on him. And then they used him on the next record, on Narita, where he was like a sumo wrestler. And then the next one, on Fire Down Under, just as up close, and then they used him on the next two records too. And he was just stuck. It's one of them things, we use him a little bit on the back of Thunder still, but we tried to make a change, but he's not on the front. We have that Voldemort guy on the front, but on the
Yeah.
back, we had a little bitty picture of a seal. And on a Privilege, it's all TV sets, but if you look at one of the TV sets, there's a seal. And so when we continued on with the fifth chapter, I said, "We got to bring Johnny back, the Tior." His name was the Mighty Tior. Johnny the Mighty Tior, we started calling him. And so we brought him back, but he's a harp seal. He's a little fluffy harp seal. People freak out. It's like, Maiden's got Eddie the Head, and then Megadeth's got Ribbon Head, and they got all these heavy guys. Riot's got a little cute seal. But anyway, so we try to make him look as heavy as possible, especially on the Riot 5 album covers. We try to make him look like on the bikers, the new record and all that. So people, it's just, it's kind of quirky, but people familiarize it with Riot. It goes, "That's the Riot little seal character." And people, some people love the guy and they think it's funny. We're always known as the band with the worst album covers but the best music, even on what was it, Eddie Trunk Show, the metal
Yeah.
show. He had top five worst album covers, best music. We were number one. So, but I mean, you get used to it. And we made the masks. We actually had masks made, and so we started doing like Maiden. Like when we play shows, we usually ask fans, our people, come out and put them on, and they just run out to the stage and stuff like that. So it's kind of our guy. And on the Mean Streets, we did the videos. We have Mean Streets coming out with the release of the album on May 10th, and in the video we shot in New York, we actually have Johnny in the video. So people are going to be like, "What? He's walking around." We put a mask on a guy and he's got his leather. He's walking around with us. We're at a bar doing shots. The seal's there with us. I mean, it's nuts. It'll be funny.
I'm looking forward to it. Well,
It's funny.
he's iconic on its own. And it's such an iconic mascot and metal, and it stands out for sure.
I know.
Now what's, in the grand scheme of things, what's the future of Riot 5 look like?
Well, we're going to try and, keep putting out material and playing as long as we can. We're not spring chickens anymore, but we try to do it. We have lives and things and stuff like that. Back in the 80s, we're, fancy, careless and fancy free. We weren't married. We weren't, it was just like the 80s, we were doing everything. And so, now when it changes a little bit, when you do get a little bit older, there's certain things that you have to include, like, you have family, so you have to, be peculiar about touring and not stepping on toes of certain things. And there's five of us, but we still, we're just happy and we continue on and we're going to keep going. We have to intertwine certain things, but as long as there's a crowd out there, we're going to keep doing it. We are, we're getting up there, a few cats in the 60s and 50s, so we're still performing, which is kind of cool, and people are digging it. Mark used to say, even though the longevity of a band is through good music, releasing good music. And so we feel like we're releasing decent music. So if you start, releasing crap music, maybe the following will start dying down. But I think, for the age of the band, we still have that modern sound, and all the players, play like when we did back in the day. And so we just look forward to at least a few more records, a few more tours, and then we'll decide, what we're gonna do. If we're gonna do the final tour and then come back 2 years later, the final tour and come back 2 years later, like all the bands do nowadays. This is the final chapter, and then they come out in 5 years. We're like, God dang.
That seems to be the marketing strategy.
Yeah, because they figure everybody's going to buy a ticket, but we're like, we're not going to go out like that. It's like, when we can't do it anymore, we can't do it anymore. And we'll go out with a bang. We'll release like a double album video, do a big thing, and when we got to do. But as long as we're able to do it, I mean, personally, and with everything involved, I mean, it's cool. I'm luckily for my age, being in the 60s, I'm in decent health. We can still do things with the band, record and stuff like that. And it's all that tequila I drink, If it wasn't for the tequila, I wouldn't look like this. But we are the tequila band. So, but we're gonna continue, man. As long as the people are there, we'll continue performing. When we're getting booked, people come out, people buy the records. People like yourself, we like doing podcasts, and it means a lot. This is the satisfaction we get. We're like, people are spreading the word, so there's still, Riot out there. So we'll continue as long as we can.
My pleasure, man. Well, what's the best way for people to stay updated with everything, Riot?
We have all the websites. We have areyoureadytoriot.com was the official website, and the Facebook page, Riot Rock City. And then we have Riot B on Instagram and stuff like that. But that's the place. Or Raining Phoenix, Music Atomic Fire. They're always posting stuff, so they always put links in different things for us. But that's where you'll find everything. On the areyoureadytoriot.com, it's got you can purchase the album there, CDs, brand, all the merch, and it's got all the tour dates and everything. So that's the best place to go to see what's going on. Our Facebook, we post stuff on there too.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Don, thank you so much for joining me.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me. And like I said, we continue for people like you too. It's like, man, it makes us feel good, that people are still wanting to talk to us, So thank you, brother. Rock and
Well,
roll.
my pleasure, man. I'm Brandon Baddock, and this is Disturbing the Priest.